Maybe you followed the fraud conviction this week of former WorldCom chief Bernie Ebbers. Or maybe your eyes glazed over. The intricacies of accounting fraud can be confusing, if not dull, but not always. Listen first to writer Kurt Eichenwald's musical take on corporate deceit and betrayal. Took a path of lies to a place I didn't recognize. Music is a release, you might say, from Eichenwald's day job. He's a senior writer with the New York Times and the author of a new book on the fall of Enron. It's called Conspiracy of Fools. Here's Eichenwald reading from the opening page.
October 24th, 2001, Houston, Texas. Ken Lay settled into his black Mercedes 600 SL, easing out of his reserved parking space at the Huntington Condominiums. The 8-year-old convertible cruised past the mansions bordering the street, homes that testified to the financial success of the city's oil men and corporate barons. Many estates peeked out from behind manicured shrubs and wrought iron gates, or were far from the road on a ridge sloping down to the Buffalo Bayou. But Lay made no effort to peer beyond those veils of privacy. As Houston's most influential businessman, he had already been welcomed in most every River Oaks mansion that might interest him.
And that's Ken Lay of Enron notoriety. But Conspiracy of Fools has more in common with The Bonfire of the Vanities or a John le Carré novel than with other books about business. Writer Kurt Eichenwald joins us from our New York bureau to talk about his new book and the thrill of investigating Enron. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Okay, I did not want to read this book. It's about 750 pages. I have lots of other things I need to do in my life. I just started glancing through it, and I could not stop reading it. It's really gripping. How do you do that with a topic that I didn't really read a lot about when it was in the business pages?
I realized a long time ago, John Grisham writes business books. You know, he writes about law firms, insurance companies, business moguls, cigarette companies. I mean, he's writing the same thing as fiction that I'm writing for the newspaper, for the New York Times, as fact. Those stories are thrilling. Those stories are about greed and power and arrogance, and they're often tragic. Once I recognized all that, I decided that when I wrote books, I was going to write what were effectively true novels, written like corporate thrillers, but reported so that all the information is true. With Enron, you know, it was the kind of thing that Grisham would have thought up.
A few years ago, another book on Enron came out. It's called The Smartest Guys in the Room. You've titled yours Conspiracy of Fools. What are these people? I mean, smart fools?
Well, I think their title was meant to be ironic. They are exceedingly smart people. This is one thing, you know, you can be a fool and be smart. You know, Enron was loaded with very, very smart people. It just didn't have enough people who were wise. They couldn't see their failings. They couldn't see their incompetence. They couldn't see that they had created a poisonous corporate culture.
Which was reflective of the period, you write.
Yes, it is the thing of business that I've always found interesting, that business people will be in the raft going through the rapids, stroking the paddle and saying, look how fast I'm making the boat go. They will be in a rising market, in a booming market, and say, look how brilliant I am. Look at everything I'm doing and how successful it is. When in fact, they're just being pushed along by the river of the marketplace. It's not until the rapids stop. It's not until you get into still water and there's not booming stock prices and investors clamoring for shares that you actually find out who are the good business people and who aren't.
Well, tell me about these people. I mean, everyone probably knows who Ken Lay is at this point, but as a person, when things started spinning out of control, where was he?
Ken Lay clearly was not a person who had the capacity to deal with these circumstances once everything started coming apart. I'm not sure if anybody would be in the capacity to handle that circumstance, but he certainly wasn't.
Jeff Skilling, he was next in command at Enron. What was his problem throughout these whole events?
Jeff Skilling is a very complex person. On one level, he is probably one of the smartest corporate strategists who's ever walked into a business world. On the other hand, I don't think he was fit to be chief executive of a major American corporation. He had a big faith in throwing the people who agreed with him, giving them a huge amount of license, allowing them to try businesses that they may or may not have been qualified to do, hoping that their brilliance would work things out and believing in it when they told him it did. The result of that was that they appointed a chief financial officer, I mean, a Fortune 50 company with a chief financial officer who had no true background in accounting, no true background as a chief financial officer.
Andy Fastow, who seemed like a bit player when I tried to reflect back on what I had absorbed about the Enron scandal, but he is very much at the center of this book.
I mean, Andy Fastow is without doubt the criminal. Doesn't mean that there aren't other people who committed crimes, but he is the criminal of Enron. Why do I say that? Well, he's the guy who ends up with $60 million of stolen money in his bank account. Those are the kinds of things that I call the stations of the cross of fraud. Tons of money going into bank accounts, secret files, double books, destruction of evidence. I mean, that's the kind of stuff that you usually expect to see. He's also a liar. He lied to the board. He lied to his friends. It's, you know, I've written about a lot of criminals, and so I'm kind of used to them. But at the end of the day, Andy Fastow had one sin that I truly find unforgivable, is that he was incompetent. He was easily the worst chief financial officer to ever work ever in an American corporation. You could have doubled the number of crimes that Andy Fastow had committed. And if he had simply been competent at his job, Enron could have survived.
Why, I'm curious, when things started coming up fuzzy and not right. I mean, at one point, you have executives reporting $500 million in profits, but the actual revenue should have been $8 million. why did not more people speak up when these things started happening?
Well, it's interesting. It is sort of, you know, there were people who were able to see just enough to say, there's something wrong here. Probably my favorite person is a fellow that nobody's ever heard of, Kevin Kendall, who had spent a year analyzing what's called corporate-wide risk at Enron. And he had concluded that the off-books partnerships presented a unique threat to Enron's survival. And he, along with his boss, made a presentation in January of 2001 to the treasurer of Enron. And they present this potential view of the future of what could happen. And it's horrifying because it's exactly what does happen. When I found Kevin Kendall's presentation and I was reading it, it was like something that a fortune teller had put together.
Kurt Eichenwald, you could not possibly have been privy to all the conversations, the private moments that go on in this book. I mean, you're inside people's heads.
Are you calling me a liar?
You're suggesting what they're thinking. I mean, how much artistic leeway is there here?
None. Everything in here comes from someplace. I'm delving into a mammoth level of detail that people actually find at first to be unnerving and a little disturbing.
Can you give me an example of a kind of question you might ask?
Somebody says, I woke up in the morning, or the phone rang and I woke up. I said, okay, where's the phone? Where do you sleep? What size bed is it? Was your wife there that night? Was she sleeping on the other side of the bed? Did she wake up? When you reach over the phone, where is the phone? Did you turn on the light before the phone came on? You know, what I'm doing actually is I am painting a mental picture in my head. People look at me and finally in frustration say, why do you want to know all of this?
And you say?
It's reality. You get to actually see the nuances that go into one of these cases and the thrills and the unbelievable, you know, bizarreness, which sometimes overtakes the story.
You write in your prologue that a scandal like this is bound to happen again.
If you study market history, every time we have a boom, standards drop, accounting standards drop, investing standards drop, eventually the party has to come to an end. It always does. And when it does, that's actually, it's at that moment of transfer when it's not clear that it's over, when all the crimes really start. It's not these people thinking we're going to have to do crimes for the next 50 years because the market has now turned. It's, oh, there's a hiccup in the marketplace. We need to bridge our way from where we are now to the future by cheating. And they believe rising prices in the future will solve things. Well, the party's over.
Kurt Eichenwald. His new book on the Enron scandal is called Conspiracy of Fools. Thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.